Let's talk about PARP inhibitors and prostate cancer.
All right, so the first one that made a splash was olaparib. And this is now 4 years ago, January 28th, 2016, the FDA actually came up with this breakthrough designation for olaparib. And at that time, there was interest in both BRCA1 and 2, as well as ATM being sort of on the label. And again, a breakthrough designation does not mean that there's an approval. It just means that the FDA is willing to consider an accelerated approval if there is a positive phase three study in those patients. And that breakthrough designation was based on this 49-patient study published in the New England Journal of Medicine by Joaquin Mateo and Johann de Bono. And this was a genomically unselected patient population. They all had to have metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer. They all had to have a baseline metastatic biopsy. But then they were treated with olaparib regardless of their mutation status. And then in a post-hoc fashion, there was a whole exome sequencing done. And the interesting thing about this study was that virtually all the responses were in those patients who had one or more somatic or germline homologous recombination mutations. So 16 of the 49 patients had a mutation. And in those 16 patients, the response rate was 88%, which is very, very high. This was a composite response based on either PSA dropping or tumor shrinking or both. In the biomarker negative group, in other words, those patients that had no mutations, only 6% responded. And if you look at the progression-free survival and overall survival, again, this is a single-arm study split by whether or not the patients had or did not have a homologous recombination mutation. And the blue line represents the patients that did have a mutation, and their progression-free survival and overall survival was greater. This led to the FDA breakthrough designation. This was a non-randomized study. There was no control arm. Now, one of the things that we became interested in at Hopkins is to distinguish the effectiveness of these drugs in BRCA1 and 2 versus ATM. And after that New England Journal of Medicine paper was published, we and others began to use these drugs off-label. We published this paper after we had done this 23 times with our first 23 patients. These are all off-label use of olaparib. And the patients in light or dark blue are patients that have BRCA2 or BRCA1 mutations. And the five patients in the yellow or orange are the patients that had ATM mutations. And on the waterfall plot showing PSA responses, all the PSA responses that we saw were in the BRCA2s and BRCA1s, and almost all the patients with ATM had basically progression as their best response. And the Kaplan-Meier curve of rPFS, the PARP inhibitors really work well in the blue line, which is the BRCA1 and 2, but they all had progressed within 3 months median with the ATM group. So we actually had a signal here, which was a bit sobering and somewhat depressing, that even though the FDA included ATM on their breakthrough status for this particular drug, that it may not pan out. Now, fast forward to the pivotal phase three study, which was called PROFOUND. The study looks a bit complicated. There were basically two cohorts. Cohort A was the primary cohort of interest, and this was the one that the FDA was going to either approve or disapprove the drug on. And cohort A was patients that had either BRCA1, BRCA2, or ATM mutations. They had to have one of those three. It could be germline, it could be somatic, it didn't matter. And the central lab that did this was Foundation Medicine. And they were then randomized to receive either olaparib as a monotherapy or physician's choice between abiraterone or enzalutamide, either one. There was also a second cohort, which is cohort B, that allowed inclusion of patients with 12 other homologous repair genes, BARD1, BRIP1, CDK12, et cetera, et cetera. And in those patients, the same thing happened. They were randomized either to receive olaparib or physician's choice of AR therapy. The primary endpoint, this is very important, was only for cohort A, and the rest was exploratory. Primary endpoint was rPFS, and it was met. So this was presented at ESMO by Maha Hussein, has not yet been published. And there was at least a doubling of median radiographic progression-free survival with a hazard ratio of 0.34, highly statistically significant. And the overall survival also trended in favor of olaparib, although it did not meet the statistical threshold on this interim analysis. But pretty compelling results there. One of the things that I found the most interesting was the breakdown in the progression-free survival according to the gene. So if you look at BRCA2, you see a very big and profound difference favoring olaparib with a 10.8-month median PFS versus 3.4 months. If you look at ATM, you actually see no difference. You see 5.3 versus 4.7, not statistically different. What was even more surprising to me, no clear difference in BRCA1 either. So although we lump these genes together because they sound the same, they're actually functionally different. And if I was interpreting this, I would say that the main benefit was driven by primarily or maybe even exclusively the BRCA2 patients. Now, there are these rare genes, RAD51B and RAD54L, which if you speak to a DNA repair biologist, he'll tell you that these are very critical to homologous repair function. And there did seem to be a very big difference in those patients favoring olaparib, but those genes are quite rare in prostate cancer, more like in the 1% range. So maybe it looks like from this pivotal phase 3 trial that the majority of the benefit is in BRCA2. It'll be interesting to see what the FDA says about that, because again, their primary endpoint encompasses all three genes. So it would kind of be unprecedented for them to change their mind and say, we're only going to approve this for BRCA2, although they have every right to do so. Or they could say, this might be approved for all three genes. We don't know what's going to happen.